Welcome, everybody. It's a pleasure, as always, to see all of you. Now, we ended last week with a discussion of the anti-Semitism reflected by Haman in what he says in Pasuk Chet, in Paragimel Pasuk Chet. And obviously, with the President of the United States about to speak in a few minutes, ostensibly about one of the topics that he'll be speaking will be anti-Semitism and the different things that have been taking place in America. This is particularly poignant, I think, for each and every one of us. And also for most of us here in our generation, of course, the Holocaust and its effects looms very large in our minds. And the same things that Paro said, the same things that Haman said, are being repeated over and over again. Okay? So that's what we ended with in Pasuk Chet last week. That brings us to Pasuk Tet. Now, in Pasuk Tet, we have a very, very important transitional statement by Haman. And what Haman basically does is this. He leads, almost as if it was a courtroom scenario, he leads from Pasuk Chet, where all these calumnies are uttered against us, okay? He leads on to Pasuk Tet, where the big request is asked. In fact, if I were you and I was taking notes, I would say, next to Pasuk Tet, you could write something along the lines of the big request. This is the request that changes the entire scenario of what's going on in Shushan and the rest of Ahasuerus's kingdom. This is the request by Haman to completely destroy our people. Okay? So he says this. Well, because of all these terrible things about the Jews, im ahamelech tov, if it's good in the king's eyes, yikatev la'abdan. So let's have it written out that the Jews should be annihilated. Okay? That's what's being requested. He then sweetens his offer, and he says, Va'aseret alafim kikar kesev eshko ayidei osei hamalacha. And you know what? For giving me this opportunity to murder the Jews, what I will do for you, king, is I will give you 10,000 talents of silver, which, as you can well imagine, was a great deal of money, okay? Eshkol, and I'll hand them over, Ayidei Osei HaMalacha, to those people who are busy counting and assuring that the money is really legitimate, Lahavi El Ginzei HaMelech, to be brought to the, the treasure houses of the king. Okay. Now, go to this new page that I gave you tonight, and it starts with the words on the top, Pesikta Zutarta, okay, which is one of the Midrashim, also known as Lekach Tov, Esther Perek Gimel. And let's look at that first pasuk. So here's what he says. Oh, and by the way, you remember we've had this duel going on in the Medrash as to whether or not Ahasuerus was truly an evil individual, or he really wasn't anything like Haman, and he sort of got tricked into it. Now, I will tell you, until I started teaching this and learning it, Be'iyun, learning it in great depth, I had never heard the idea that Ahasuerus was an evil person in and of himself. I promise, I all these years that I've done the Megillah, I never heard that. Never saw it, never read it. But it seems to be the predominant theme. And if you ever wanted proof, let's read this Medrash together. So here's what the Pasuk in Tet said. Imaha melech tov ika tev avdam. If it's, you know, good as far as the king is concerned, let it be written that all the Jews should be annihilated. Ready? This is, some of you, this is going to knock your socks off. Amar lo Achashverosh. Achashverosh responded back to Haman. I too wanted to annihilate the Jews. So obviously, you know what side this medrash is coming out on. Ella, shiareani. I was afraid. Mibnei Elokehem, because of their God. Now he's now going to recite seven things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us, that as far as Achashverosh was concerned, did not bode well for an attempt at annihilating the Jews. Here's what he says. Shehitbia Paro v'chelo b'yam. Number one, he drowned Paro and all of his army, right, in the sea, the Yamsuf. Two, v'harag et Amalek, and he killed Amalek. Three, v'ibed Sichon v'Og, and he wiped out Sichon and Og. V'lamed Aleph Malachim, that's four. And the 31 kings that were in Canaan. V'Sisra, even Sisra, the mighty Sisra, right? He got slammed. That's five. U'Midyan, that's six. V'Amalek, okay, and Amalek is mentioned again. V'Harbei Kamotam, and many like them. So altogether, you have so far six, because you can't count Amalek twice. V'Sanherev, the call Agpav. Now we're getting very close to the time of Achashverosh. And in addition, Sennacherib and all of his mighty divisions, they were also wiped out. So basically, what Achashverosh is saying is that, you know what, I wanted to wipe out the Jews just as much as you. But I sat back and I realized, militarily, things did not bode all that well. So, Achashverosh says back to Haman, Ela nikra l'chachamim, let's call the wise people. U'l'chartumim. Now, chartumim is a word that you all know. It appears in Sefer Shemot, right? The chartumim Mitzrayim. What were the chartumim? So you could call them soothsayers, necromancers, wizards of some sort, okay? But not the good ones that appear in Harry Potter, okay? So, Kavan Shiba'u, so when these people came, Amar Lahem, Hatamim Ha'ele. So, what happened was, is the king told over what he really wanted to do, which was to murder Jews, but he said, you know, it doesn't look too good. Va'ana lahem Haman, okay, and then once the king said this, and they said it back to the king, and they agreed with him, now who steps to the fore? Va'ana lahem Haman. Haman answered, wait a minute, guys. All that you've told me was only up to Sennacherib, right? But let's go to the good stuff. Hare Nebuchadnezzar. Saraf et Beit Elokehem. After all, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beit HaMikdash in 586 BCE. Veheglam Bavavla. And he, now Bavla means El Bavel. Okay, it's an unusual phrase in the Medrash because it's usually only in Chumash, but it's here. Veheglam Bavavla. And he exiled them to Bavel. Vechol Mikdash Olakach. And anything that was there in the Mikdash, he took. After all, what were you guys just drinking from? Teidu, you should know, says Haman, the past is the past. Ki kavar hanicham Elokehem. Because after all, God has abandoned them. Oh! Once they heard this incredibly astute reasoning on the part of Haman, miyad kiblu mimenu. Immediately, all the wise men in the Khartoumim accepted it. So if they accepted it, who else accepted it? Achashverosh. Time to move on. V'az amar lo Haman. Okay, then once Haman knew that, you know, what do they say? In for a quarter or in for a penny, in for a dollar, something like that. Haman knew this was his time. He was going to go for it. V'az amar lo Haman. Then Haman said, Eini yodea akshav kamahem. Listen, I have no idea how many Jews there are now. Aval but say tami Mitzrayim. But everybody knows that when they left Egypt, hayu shesh ma'od elef ragle. There were 600,000 people. Now, this is really a misnomer, because what does the 600,000 refer? The men. One could assume that every one of the 600,000 men, or at least the majority of the 600,000 men, had a wife. Okay, so let's already, we're up to 1.2. If you've got wives, okay, you've got children, okay? And in those days, probably 3, 4, 5 kids were pretty normal, okay? So those of you who are more math-oriented, do it. But let's say we've got a substantial number of Jews that leave Mitzrayim, all right? So what does Achashverosh offer? He says, no, listen, you know what? That's how many there were. Hareini noten lecha kuf dinar. L'kol echad v'echad. I'm going to give you 100 dinarim for each and every one of those Jews. And apparently, if you do the math in terms of ancient Persia, sh'ne'amar v'arseret ha'arafim kikar kesef eshkol. That's where he comes up with this number, right, of 10,000 talents of silver. Okay? Now, you ready? You know that the Megillah, the month of Adar, everything, there's always something going on behind the scenes, right? Kutcherichu is operating in silence, but he's still operating. He still runs the world. You know, Rav Chaim Halberstam Shlita was my Rebbe in many ways in Brooklyn. And every single Shalosh Shittos, I can't say the Yiddish intelligently and correctly, so I'll say it in English. So every single Shalosh Shittos used to say, never forget that the Ribbono Shalom runs the world. It didn't matter what he was speaking about, happy, sad, whatever it was, he always, and every Shalosh Shittos, he said, the Ribbono Shalom runs the world. You're going to see it right here in the Medrash. Vuhu, meaning Haman. Lo yada. He didn't know. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magid Mereshit Acharit. He didn't know that Hashem was truly omniscient. He didn't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could see from the very second that he created the world to the ultimate teleological conclusion of the world as we know it with Mashiach and so forth. He also didn't know, v'hikdim shaklav, that he demanded from Klal Yisrael the shekel, or as we just read on Shabbos, what the machatzita shekel, he had that be given, right, prior to Haman giving his shakle, his shkalim, okay? How do you know that's true? So this is really amazing. Kedetanan be'echad, like it says in the Mishnah, on the first. Be'echad, on the first, we'll see what this refers to in 2 seconds. Be'echad mashmim al shkalim. On the first of what? Drop down one more line. The Mishnah Masechet Shkalim. What a great place for it. Be'echad Be'adar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had it all worked out. On the first of Adar, Mashmi'im al Hashkalim. So, we had already given a kofet, or a kapara, l'nafshenu, by the first of Adar. We've been doing it for years after years after years. And that served as a protection against what Haman would eventually do with his offer of the 10,000 talents of silver, which of course would be worth many, many shekalim. So I thought you guys would find this really an amazing medrash. When I discovered it, I was so excited. Mm-hmm. I was just so excited. I didn't even know how to say it. And, you know, it just was so interesting. Yes, go ahead.
If someone really believed that Hashem, you know, abandoned the Jews, then why did he want to pick a month that nothing good ever happened or bad ever happened? Or, you know, why was that such a consideration?
I'm not sure I fully understand your question. Could you please say it one more time?
If Hashem abandoned the Jews, what does he care when he annihilates them? Why did he have to pick a month that nothing ever happened?
Ah, okay, that's a good question. Let's say, using 21st century terminology, flying it back then, let's say that he was a Avodah Zorah driven in his decision making. I think that's a good way to say it. In other words, he thought that all outcomes would be driven by the forces of evil and Avodah Zarah. So therefore, he didn't want to make any major decision without going to his various oracles. In this case, the oracle that he used was a Goral. Right?
And I thought he used the Goral because he wanted to take a time when nothing ever happened.
Not nothing ever happened, but as we said in last week's shir, it would be the most auspicious time to kill the Jews. That's what we learned last week. There was a medrash per se regarding that. Okay? You wrapped your head around that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, next, let's continue. Pasuk Yud. Now, I have to thank, for part of what I'm going to tell you in Pasuk Yud, I have to thank one of my chavrusas, Rabbi Danny Rosenblum, who... he and I have learned, as I think I mentioned to you, verse by verse, Rashi by Rashi, okay, Medrash by Medrash, all the way from Bereshit Bara Elohim. We're up to the middle of Mishpatim. It's taken us, I think, so far 15 years. Okay, and but we learned very, 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 very deeply. So as a result, what I'm about to share with you, I had emblazoned in my mind. Yud. V'yasar ha-melech et tabato me'al yado. And the king, meaning Achashverosh, of course, took, okay, his ring, took off his ring, me'al yado, from his hand. V'yitna lahaman, and he gave it to Haman, ben Hamadata, okay, from this genealogy of Hamadatta, Agagi, going back to Agag, okay, Tzorer HaYehudim, the enemy of all the Jews. Now, go to the attached page in the little booklet. And here's something that is truly, honestly amazing. Go to the center where it says, Bereshit Perek Mem Aleph. Okay? Pasuk Mem Aleph. Vayomer Paro Yosef. Paro said to Yosef, Re'e, look here. Natati Otecha. I am placing you. I'll call Eretz Mitzrayim over all of Egypt. Now, look at the two parts that I have bolded for you. The first six words in the next pasuk from Sefer Shmot, and in the pasuk we're doing from Megillat Esther, are literally exactly the same. V'yasar paro, well, except for the word paro and hamelech. V'yasar paro et tabato me'al yedo, right? First six words. V'yitenota. So the paro took off his ring from on his hand, and he vitenota, and he gave it ayad Yosef. He placed it, or he gave it into the hand, or onto the hand of Yosef. Esther, v'yasar hamelech etabato me'al yado. Okay, and the king took off his ring, right, from on his hand. V'yitna l'haman, and he gave to Haman. Now, in terms of dikduk, guys, v'yitenota and v'yitna, exactly the same. V'yitna would be who natan ota. Okay, so v'yiten would be who natan. Okay, so it's exactly the same thing. Of course, to you know, it's like real estate. What's the most important word about real estate, guys?
Location.
Location. Did I say location? So, for example, you take one of our houses here in Woodmere. So let's say, for argument's sake, the house in Woodmere is, oh, I don't know, $500,000 in Woodmere. Okay? If it was in Brooklyn, that would be $1 million. Okay? If it was in another area, like some of those places in Connecticut, it would be 1.5. The same house.
And North Carolina would be 200.
Oh, yeah, with a swimming pool and a tennis court.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you a story with something, but I don't want to waste the time here. So, the reason I'm telling you this, it's all, even though you got the first six words, and for argument's sake, the dikduk is almost the same in the seventh word and the eighth word, it all depends who's receiving the ring. When Yosef receives the ring from Paro, okay, it's a major part in what ultimately becomes the story of the Exodus, but it certainly is a major part in saving the known world of the time. Because as you recall from your reading in Sefer Shemot, the entire world goes to Egypt to get food. Yosef saves the entire known planet. However, so that was Latov. But of course, when the king gives his ring to Haman, that's Lara. So very interesting, even though you're starting with the same exact words, okay, and you have two different kings, the two different recipients of the ring are as different as could be. One is bringing Yeshua and Hatzalah and Hatzlacha, and the other is bringing evil incarnate. Okay? So I thought you'd find it so... I was so happy. I said to myself, wait a minute. I know this pasuk. And I know these words. And I was fortunate enough, without having to use the Bar Ilan, I went right to them, and there they were. And again, it's because of the learning I did with my brother. So he has to get the credit for it. All right. Next, we go on. The end of the pasuk, okay, talks again about Haman, and that leads us really into pasuk Yud Aleph. Now, Yud Aleph is a fascinating, fascinating pasuk, because I have to tell you something. Again, until I read this very, very carefully, all the years that I've been listening to the Megillah, I always thought, and I was wrong, I always thought that Haman actually gave the money to the king. And that the king was this venal, you know, disgusting individual who accepted the money as payment for murder of the Jews. I'm wrong. I was wrong. Let's read the pasuk. Vayomar HaMelech laHaman, and the king said to Haman, HaKesef Natun Lach, the money is given to you. Which in Brooklynese would be, forget about it. In real English, keep the money. Keep it. Gegas into hate, if he knew Yiddish. Keep the money. He didn't want the money. V'ha'am, and regarding the people that you want to murder, la'asot bo ketov be'enecha. You do anything you want with them. Because, and see how that fits so beautifully into the Medrash that I shared with you before? It's uncanny how it fits. Okay? Now, before we see the next Medrash, I came up with an idea. Why is the king why is Achashverosh so willing to simply murder the Jews? People that, again, could not be very large in number within his kingdom, being that he has 127 countries, right? And as I said last week, let's compare that, you know, so to speak, to the Jews in the United States. What are we? We're 0.03% of the population of America, right? At the most. At the most. There's about 6.5-7 million Jews in the United States of America. Okay? Roughly exactly the same number that were murdered by the Nazis. Yimach Shemam. That's the truth. That's the truth. Worldwide, maybe there's 16 million, maybe 16 million Jews in the entire world. Okay? So I can't imagine that there were that many more Jews on a percentage basis in Persia, ancient Persia. So maybe we're, you know, all right, maybe we're slightly larger, but we're 0.0 something. So Ahasuerus didn't know anything about us, didn't care anything about us, except he didn't like us. Now, why? Why? That's what I told you I was going to try to answer. I believe that in many ways Ahasuerus was very much a Stalin-like figure. So if you want to know which side of the Machloket I'm coming out on the Medrash, I think it's pretty clear. I think he was truly an evil individual. He saw us, especially in the light in which we were painted by Haman, he saw us as a third column. Couldn't trust us. We're everywhere. Right? Doesn't it sound like every anti-Semite you ever heard in your life? Mm-hmm. We're everywhere. We've infiltrated. We don't do things that everybody else does. How can you possibly trust us? We have a different language, a different script. Okay, not that other people didn't have their own language and script, but ours was really weird. And we claimed whatever we claimed in terms of this relationship with a special God. We didn't accept any other God. I mean, you know, we were just really different. And therefore, that is why I believe he was so willing to kill us. Okay, it's the wrong word. The proper word is murder. Okay, for example, what does it say in the Aseret HaDibrot, guys? It doesn't say lo taharog, do not kill. What does it say? Lo tirtzach, don't murder. So for example, lahavdil, when the Israeli army goes out on patrol and saves Israeli citizens, and that entails a loss of life, that's not murder. Okay? It is taking life, but it's not murder. Murder means to take life in cold blood. So what Ahasuerus wants to do is murder us, okay? Just like the Nazis. Just like the Nazis. Okay, let's go to the last part of the sheet that I gave you tonight. This is from Shmot Rabbah, okay, in Parsha Truma. Kevan Sheba HaRasha Im Hamama. When the Rasha came, the Rasha, of course, is who?
Haman.
So, doesn't it really seem that every Medrash, right, is, you know, really painting pretty much the same picture? Amalei HaMelech, the king said to him, HaKesef Natun Lach, the Kesef is given to you, the money is yours. Okay, at that moment in time, again, Kodesh Baruch Hu is working behind the scenes. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kach atem mochrim shali, al shali? Wait a second. You, Ahasuerus, think you're going to be able to sell on any level the Jews? Okay? You're going to be able to sell the Jews to Haman? Wait a minute. They're already mine. Why? Because we have a pasuk. In Vayikra Kafe, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim, because Yisrael are my servants. V'kativ, it also says in the Navi Haggai, Liyah kesef v'zahav, and to me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the money and the gold. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecha, I hereby take an oath. By the way, Chayecha is found very, very, very often in the Medrash. It means to take an oath. So Chayecha, Ma she'amarta, HaKesef Natun Lach, I hereby swear, says Kodesh Baruch Hu, that you're right. All of your money is going to be given away. But Haman, you'd be very surprised where that money is going to go. The king's not going to accept it, but look at the brilliance of this Medrash. Bayom Ahu, this is toward the end of our Megillah. Bayom Ahu, on that day, Natan HaMelech Achashverosh LeEsther HaMalka. Achashverosh gave to Esther the queen at Beit Haman. So ultimately, does Haman give away all of his money? Right? And this is a case, of course, Acharei Mot. And believe me, he was not Kedoshim. Okay? Now, let's go weiter. Yud Bet, back to our Sukkim. V'yikru'u Sofrei HaMelech B'Chodesh HaRishon. What is Chodesh HaRishon, guys?
Nisan.
B'Shlosha Asar Yom Bo. Okay, so everybody was called on that day. V'yikatev K'chol Asher Tziva Haman. And they wrote down everything that Haman said. El, now ready? Here's one of the strangest words in the entire Megillah that if you listen to the Baal Kori, quite often they have a little trouble saying. El Achash Dar Penei HaMelech, to the Achash Dar Penei of the king. What are Achash Dar Penei? Well, as everybody knows, they're satraps. You all know what a satrap is. It sounds like something that you cure with penicillin, right? What is a satrap? They are the provisional governor in ancient Persian Empire. Don't think I knew what that was before I looked it up. But that is what a satrap is. Yes, that is a legitimate word. It's probably ancient Persian. It's not Hebrew. Vel hapachot, and to the governors. Asher al medina umadina, they were on every country. Al sarei, to the princes. Am va'am, of every people and people. Medina umadina, and like I said before, so we had our own script. It's not a big deal, because look. Medina umadina kikiktava. Each country had its own script. Va'am va'am kil shana. And each people had their own unique language. Okay? B'shem HaMelech Achashverosh, which is all done in the name of the king. Nichtav, was it written? V'nechtam, was it sealed? B'taba'at HaMelech, with the king's ring. And as you all know, later on, when everything, you know, changes, and Esther says, listen, king, how about rescinding the edict? You go, I can't do that. It went on under my ring. Okay? Talk about a guy who doesn't change approaches. But anyway. Okay? So, next step. V'nishloach sefarim biyad haratzim. And these pamphlets were given into the hands of the runners because the internet was down. And the printing press wasn't invented till about 1,000 years later with Gutenberg and all of that. So the only way to do it was you had the version of Fed Express of that day, which were people running. El kol medinot hamelech, to all the countries of the king. Now, it's not enough la'abed, to murder. Look at the three words that are used. La'hashmid, to destroy. Laharog, okay, to kill. Ula abed, to obliterate. Okay? Now, what does that all sound like to you? I'll give you a hint. Genocide, Hitler, and also, okay, Timche et Zecher Amalek. So what Haman does is that he knows what it says in the Torah. Don't forget, what was his name? Eichmann Yamach Shemo. Knew Hebrew. He knew Hebrew. Yeah. And when Eichmann Yamach Shemo was hung, what were his final words? You ever read what his final words were? He calls out Purim Fist. It was a Purim celebration. Those are his final words as he drops. Apparently so. And when he's picked up in Argentina, if my memory serves correctly, he realizes very quickly that the people who pick him up are Mossad, he starts speaking Hebrew to them. Okay? So, believe me, Haman knew about this. So, Lashmid, Larog, Labed, et kol ha-Yehudim, all the Jews. And whoever said genocide, Minaar, from the youngest, Vad Zakein, to the eldest, Taf, women, children, Vinashim, and women. Okay? Biyom Echad, on one day. What would that one day be? B'shlosha Asar, L'chodesh Shneim Asar. On the 13th day of the 12th month. And in case you wonder how this is being figured out, Megillah helps us because I guess we're all trying to listen a little bit on the night. Hu Chodesh Adar. It's the 13th of Adar. Now, not only that, Ushlal Alam, Lavos, and then they take everything. Everything. Go ahead. Apparently, the Jews probably, even if they were fairly assimilated, which many of them were, they apparently probably lived still together. So, for example, there are parts of many, many places, many cities, many towns, where you might not have Orthodox Jews living in proximity to one another in America, but you will have neighborhoods that are known as Jewish neighborhoods.
All they can do is move. They had 11 months.
Except by that point, all the neighbors already knew. And I can't imagine that they were willing to protect us.
And there was no place to go. That was the known world.
Right?
That's scary.
That's what happened. Okay? Now, next. Let's see, let me just get the reading right. Patshegen. Okay, now Patshegen is another impossible word. It's another impossible word. I went actually to a Hebrew website that dealt with impossible words. It was called called Blag Bishvil Ivrit Kasha. That's what it was called. It was a special, this guy, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, whoever wrote it really needs to get out more. But for him, this is his great interest in life. Okay? So he says, what's Patshegen? He says, in Ivrit, it's a nusach, it's a text, ha'atik, it's an announcement, right, kind of thing. In English, we could use the word writ, which is really good if you remember the 17th century, and you could use the word posts. Okay, so that's Patshegen. Now, Patshegen haktav, okay, the writs, copies of the writ, okay, li'inatem, okay, were to be given, dat, as edicts. Now, that's the important thing. These were edicts. That's very, very important. Because, as Arlene said before, no place to hide, no place to run. B'chol medina u'medina, in every single country. Galui. Now, what does galui mean?
Revealed.
Another way of going fancier with revealed is publicized. Published. Revealed throughout the whole known world. L'chol ha'amim, to all the people. L'yot atidim, everybody, get your bloodlust on. Get ready. L'yom hazeh, to this day. Okay? Because everybody was going to have the opportunity to kill Jews. So, you know, like the old myth that the German army didn't participate in atrocities. It's a myth. It wasn't just the SS troops. We now know that it was the German army too. They involved themselves with atrocities. In this case, it's not any army. Everybody is invited, come and kill Jews. Okay? Pasuk Tedvav. Haratzim Yatsu Dechufim. The runners ran out in great haste. Okay? Basically, they were besides themselves. B'dvar HaMelech, with the matter of the king. V'hadat, And the edict, Nitna b'Shushan Abira. And this edict was then publicized throughout all of Shushan. Now, you ready? This is where we get into some amazing things. V'hamelech v'haman. And the king and Haman, Yashfu, they sat down. Lishtot, to drink. V'ayir Shushan Navocha. And the city of Shushan was completely confused. Two different ways of learning pshat. One way, all the people were really confused. What would fit with that? After all, as we're going to see in a moment on the back of this paper, we're going to see a quote from Rav Soloveitchik. After all, they had all just been what? Drinking and feasting together, having a blast. Oh, I know that Jew, he's a great guy. Oh, he's got a cute daughter. You know, everybody was having a fantastic time together. So that would be that first pshat. Rashi, however, doesn't go with that pshat. Rashi says, who was Navocha? Just the Jews. Because nobody else cared. That's the theme that Rav Soloveitchik adopts. Just turn to this page, but turn to the back. Okay, the city of Shushan was perplexed. What I'm about to read for you is an excerpt from Days of Deliverance. Okay? It was a misprint from where I got it. Days of Deliverance, Essays on Purim and Chanukah. You ready? This is the Rav in his own words. The Jews did not believe it. Okay? For those of you who are familiar with the Holocaust, the Jews of Hungary, they were the last Jews to go. Did they believe the stories? No. No. Okay? Deborah Lipstadt, the one who was recently profiled positively in that wonderful movie that was done, she wrote a book called Beyond Belief. It's an excellent book. And Beyond Belief talks about how the press in America and the free what was left of the free world, which is basically England, couldn't print the stories because they couldn't believe it. It can't be happening. The Jews didn't believe it. They refused to face reality. And here is the Rav sounding like Rashi. The non-Jews did not care. Moreover, says the Rav, the story is puzzling because of a very strange coincidence. As I just said to you a moment ago, a short time before, the entire population was invited to the 7-day feast in the grounds of the royal palace. Remember, I was very careful to describe the two different feasts in the beginning. One was the 180-day feast. This is the 7-day feast. The invitations were extended to everybody, Jew and Gentile, like all races and faiths, and to all the people who were there in Shushan. The invited guests fraternized, drank toast, shook hands, hugged each other. A little later, the ruthless and inhuman edict was issued and sent hastily with the couriers to all parts of the commonwealth to destroy, slay, and cause to perish all Jews, etc. How is it possible? What is more amazing is the cryptic remark, says Rav Soloveitchik. The posts, remember that was that strange word, the writ, etc., went forth in haste, and the decree was given out in Shushan. And the king and Haman sat down to drink, and the city of Shushan was perplexed. You ready? Remember, the Rav comes over to the United States in 1926. He has not yet been awarded his PhD from what then was called the University of Berlin. He does get his PhD awarded to him when he's in America. Okay? The Rav writes, I'm quoting verbatim, that when he was a student at the University of Berlin, he never experienced personally any anti-Semitism. The Rav writes this. But who takes over in 1933? Hitler, Yom Hakshemo. He becomes chancellor. Okay. 1924 is the failed beer hall pushed in Munich. Okay. 1926, the Rav sees the writing on the wall. He comes over with his young baby in his wife's arms. I've seen the picture of him getting off the plane, the whole thing. Okay, by 1933, Germany is unrecognizable. And you ready for this? This, in terms of historical parallel, is enough to make your hair stand on end. The king and Haman celebrated by feasting on wine. The dignitaries of the Nazi party, after completing their work on the famous Wannsee Conference Protocol, dealing with the, it's in German, it's Entlösung der Judenfrage, the final solution of the Jewish question, feasted until dawn. There was Germany. What did they feast on? On Nachwurst and beer. You ready? Here's a picture of the Wannsee Villa. The Wannsee Conference, okay, was a meeting of senior government officials of Nazi Germany and Schutzstaffel leaders. I should tell you, there were 12 there. 10 of the 12 had PhDs from the most prominent German universities. And it wasn't like today where PhD means Papa has dough. It was PhD was very, very hard. So these were in quotation marks, intellectuals who used their intellect for all the wrong purposes. Okay? And it was held in Berlin suburb of Wannsee, January 20th, 1942. That's when the final solution was planned. Now, I particularly gave you a picture of the villa. Guess who owned this magnificent villa?
The church? True, because you have all those cells in there.
It was owned by a wealthy Jewish family and had been in their family for generations. But of course, they were taken away. The state, the Nazi state, took over it, and it became the place where the Wannsee Conference, the final solution, was planned. What I can tell you in terms of cycles of history, within recent memory, it's probably the last 5 years. I apologize, I can't give you the exact date. It's fascinating to note that the council, the Jewish Council of Germany, held a meeting once again in the Wannsee Villa in Germany, and once again it was a place where Jews could come. So I think I've demonstrated to you some very powerful, and in some ways I think frightening, when you give it some real thought, parallels between the Megillah and what we know of history. And next week we'll go on to the fourth perek, God willing. And I hope that not only are we walking away with ideas about specific psukim, but I hope that you're doing inductive reasoning and you're getting the big ideas from the psukim. So we're going from the psukim to the big ideas. And I think some of them, hopefully, at least for me, are really coming clearer and clearer the deeper we go into the Megillah. So I want to thank you all for being my muses and inspiring me to study and learn with you. Thank you very much for the honor.
Thank you. Rabbi, last time.